Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 200, recorded Thursday, May 23rd, 2024. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. One topic on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast, wrapping up the Travel Commons journey. So coming to you for the last time from the Travel Commons studios in Nashville, Tennessee, after a couple of road trips, went up I-65 to Louisville, Kentucky for a pre-Kentucky Derby bike ride called, of course, Tour de Lou. And then the next week out west along I-40 to Memphis. It's given me a chance to compare, actually, if I then throw Nashville into the mix, three mid-sized mid-south river cities that I've lived in. Nashville is the largest of the three, both in population and in area. Louisville and Memphis are a bit smaller and pretty much the same size. And Nashville feels bigger, more buildings in the downtown skyline when you drive in and more big cranes putting more up. Nashville's neighborhoods feel more linked up, more contiguous space to walk with fewer, call them flat spots, places where you feel you should walk maybe a bit quicker. However, the older, more established neighborhoods of, say, Old Louisville and Midtown Memphis offer more interesting walks, I think. Memphis's Overton Park, also right in the center of the city, is really the best of the city parks that any of the three have to offer, with a mix of lawns, gardens, some old-growth forest to walk through, and a concert shell built in the 1930s where, when we passed by, a hip-hop group was doing a rehearsal walkthrough. I have to say that I'm glad that the federal and state governments failed to plow a good bit of Overton Park under back in the 60s and 70s when they wanted to route I-40 straight through the city. Now, as I said, all three are river cities, Memphis on the Mississippi, Louisville on the Ohio, Nashville on the Cumberland. And maybe because the Mississippi and the Ohio are bigger rivers, Memphis and Louisville do much more with their riverfronts than Nashville. We walked along the Mississippi through the just renovated Tom Lee Park in Memphis. Guys were putting some final touches on the walking paths and garden beds. And I biked along Louisville's Waterfront Park, both of these really nice spaces, almost like front lawns for those cities. And maybe there's something to that. The Mississippi and Ohio rivers are boundaries for those cities, and indeed for the states, for Tennessee at Memphis and for Kentucky at Louisville. Whereas the Cumberland River winds through Nashville, which in many ways seems to, it turn its back on the river. I mean, Chicago does so much more with the much smaller Chicago River than Nashville does with the Cumberland. But of course, Nashville's music scene is way beyond anything that Louisville and Memphis can offer, even beyond the honky-tonk maelstrom that is Lower Broadway in Nashville. Live music starts in the airport in Nashville and then follows you throughout the city. Irene and I joke that there must be a city ordinance mandating live music in any gathering of 10 or more people. Memphis tries hard with its Beale Street district. It has a number of clubs with live blues, R&B, and rock music coming out of the windows into the street. But it just doesn't have the density, the concentration of Lower Broadway. And Beale Street tails off after a couple of blocks into one of those sort of flat spots that make you want to look over your shoulder a bit more often. Our next road trip, out east to Chattanooga. Or chat, as I've heard people refer to it, feels like we're drawing a circle with a radius of a 2 to 3 hour drive time around Nashville and hitting all the cities within it for a day or three each, kind of trading summer TSA security lines for summer construction traffic jams. Following up, longtime listener Thelma Stubbelt wrote in about last episode's biometric discussion. Thelma writes, I really enjoyed the last episode. I work for immigration. They're working on making green cards part of the Apple Wallet. I know Global Entry is doing it as well. We have also been simplifying the biometrics process. A lot of the documents being produced had a fingerprint on the card. That is no longer being put on. I'm going to Las Vegas in the fall, looking forward to seeing the TSA's new system. Well, Thelma, thank you for that. My brother-in-law still has the green card from when he came to the U.S. with his Hungarian refugee parents in the late 50s. And it still has his baby picture on it. We get a chuckle whenever he pulls it out of his wallet. Somehow, I don't see an Apple Wallet version of that green card generating the same sort of chuckles. But as Henry and Sheldon said in the last episode, the move is towards more, not less biometrics. And Thelma's note just adds a few more data points that confirm that trend. Now, of course, automated facial recognition might be more efficient, but not always resilient. The UK's facial recognition eGate system was down for 4 hours a couple of weeks back for a system network issue. They had to fall back to old school manual facial recognition, that is, an immigration officer looking at you and then at the picture of you in your passport. And this, I don't know, seems to be becoming an annual event in the UK. Last May, they also had a similar 3 to 4 hour eGate outage. Note to self, don't fly to the UK next May. But at least it's happening in a country that prides itself on orderly queuing. Back in the COVID era, in episodes that I did in 2020 and 2021, I talked about how I was skeptical of predictions like those of Bill Gates that 50% of business travel will go away. Hot takes that virtual meetings are the new normal. The reality? First quarter earnings calls from travel companies all saying that business travel is back. Alaska Air and Southwest both said corporate travel sales grew over 20% and are back to pre-pandemic levels, as did Hilton and Hyatt. It just goes to prove that regression to the mean, or I don't know, you might call it behavioral inertia, is a strong force. Just ask all the folks laid off from e-commerce companies. And as always, thanks to the notes from folks who listened all the way to the end of the previous episode, where I said this episode would be my last. I have to tell you that if I was a listener, I wouldn't have heard it. I'd be hitting the next track button on Overcast within the second bar of Evangeline's Pictures of You song. Thelma, in her biometrics note, also said, I've been a listener of yours for, I believe, 18 years. I will miss your show, but wish you all the best. My old-time fave was your love of bashing the TSA. Another favorite thing on the podcast was the outro music. When you played the whole thing, I couldn't help but sing along. Well, Thelma, thanks very much for sticking it out for pretty much the full duration. And either I'm mellowing with age or the TSA has finally cleaned up their act 3 or 4 years ago. Or, I don't know, maybe PreCheck has just taken away the reason for those old debates about shoe sole thickness or the definition of a solid. Another lifer, Jerry Sarfati, wrote in, I'm sorry to hear that you will be ending the Travel Commons podcast. I am a long time listener, I guess about 18 years. I found your podcast when I was a road warrior. Now I'm retired, but still enjoy listening to you. Rob Cheshire of This Week in Craft Beer wrote, truly the end of an era. Roger Nash left the Instagram comment, going to miss you, sir. And at LA Flyer hit me up on Twitter to say, sad to hear about the upcoming end of the journey. However, reaching 200 episodes is truly an achievement. Thanks for all the stories and entertainment over the years. And Robert Fennerty wrote, I will miss the Travel Commons podcast for many reasons. In increasingly important order, here are my top three reasons. Number one, travel tips. I've incorporated many of your ideas and devices into my travel regimen. Most recently, the Super Bagel has become my go-to power center, and it has reduced the weight of my laptop bag, therefore allowing me to stuff other less useful junk inside of it. Number two, that's pretty good, Robert. Number two, cogent observations. The show has had so many cathartic, yes, I know, moments. For example, every time I walk into a hotel bathroom and the bottles have unintelligible labels, I think of you. In the example below, we know that my hands will smell like magnolia after I depress the plunger on one of those bottles, but will I have washed my hands or moistened them? No one can know for sure. And the final one, you. Every time a new episode enters my podcast feed, I smile. Your voice is very reassuring, and I think it lowers my pulse a few beats per minute. So I will miss your company, especially when I'm out on the road. Wow. Thank you very much, Robert, for that. I'm glad that this made an impact. Glad that my ramblings were useful and that somehow this voice is reassuring. And also thanks to everyone who wrote in. I really do appreciate those comments. They do. They mean a lot. Now, this is the point in the segment where I usually say, if you have any travel stories, comments, questions, tips, rants, the voice of the traveler, send them along to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com or to M. Peacock on Twitter, Travel Commons on Instagram or Facebook. Well, feel free to just keep doing that. And I'll probably respond. I'll still be there. But whatever we say will just be between you and me.
Release is required. Required.
So the topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, the final topic, wrapping up the Travel Commons journey. So here's how it started 19 years ago.
This is the first Travel Commons podcast, so bear with us. We got kind of a lousy microphone, and we're going to be trying some new stuff along the way, but I hope you enjoy what we got to say. Why should you care? Why should you listen? Why should you even think about subscribing to this podcast? Well, if you're interested in travel, that's what we're going to talk about, and really sort of the ground level experiences of a traveler, someone who's in airplanes and hotels and rental cars every week. That's me. We're talking to you today from the bathroom of the Wardman Park Marriott. I don't have fancy reverb filters and all the other great stuff. So instead, I thought I'd just surround myself with a lot of tile, and hopefully this thing will sound pretty good. So anyhow, Wardman Park Marriott in Northwest D.C. I'm on kind of one of my normal triangulation trips. Last week I was out on the West Coast. This week I'm out on the East Coast. Started off in O'Hare yesterday afternoon, kind of the typical O'Hare day. 6 a.m. thunderstorm shut the entire schedule to hell in a handbasket. 60 to 120 minute delays. The whole time. I tell you, it was a mess. And then today, flying down from New York, taking the shuttle out of LaGuardia, they push us back, and then we sit for 45 minutes on the runway because LaGuardia was in one of those. We got caught right in the middle of one of those LaGuardia reconfigure the runway sort of things where they take the entire 30 airplanes that are out on the runway and tell them all to turn around and go the other way because the wind shifted. It was beautiful. It's been a beautiful trip, kind of a normal trip, actually.
And here's how we're ending it with, if nothing else, a lot better sound quality and a bit more effort in the cleanup editing. But I do think the through line from episodes 1 to 200 has been consistent, capturing the voice of the traveler and through being more about the journey than the destination. A few years back, Rob Cheshire turned me onto a podcast called Steal This Beer. And their tagline is a candid conversation about beer over beer by a couple of guys who think about beer way too much. Swap travel for beer, and quite honestly, it could be a better tagline for Travel Commons, a discussion about travel by a guy who thinks about travel way too much. And I would think too much about travel because, as with many of the Road Warrior listeners who would chime in over the years, travel for me was one of the main drivers of my day-to-day existence. There was a stretch of time, years actually, where I would travel all but, I don't know, say 6 or 7 weeks a year. So over 80% of my life would be dependent upon how well each week the FAA, the TSA, 2 to 4 airports, 1 to 3 airlines, 2 to 3 hotels, and Hertz did their respective jobs. Now, you can, it's easy math. The joint probability of that many independent variables all lining up in the right way for me to get to where I wanted to be on time is just vanishingly small. I don't know, looking at it this way, it's no wonder I sounded so cranky so often on this podcast. Now, some road warriors who think way too much go, call it full-on George Clooney in the movie Up in the Air, obsessively collecting travel hacks to swerve lines, achieve precious metal status levels, doing whatever they can to be able to move through their travel days with the minimum amount of friction and the maximum efficiency. Over the years, I've called that living in the travel bubble. Now, if I'd gone this way, this podcast would have ended maybe, 100 episodes ago. I've talked a lot over the years on this podcast about how I break out of the travel bubble by taking subways and commuter trains instead of what would be more convenient taxis and Ubers, searching out local beer joints, and just roaming randomly around a city, or what the cool kids now call flaneuring. I've always figured it's a symptom of my adult ADHD, a short attention span, a need for external stimuli. You know, as you might guess, I'm really no fun on a beach vacation. Going to a new place or digging into new bits of places like, say, New York or San Francisco, where I've been, 50 times before, seeing, experiencing new things would hit my dopamine button and make up for having to grit my teeth through the umpteenth flight delay at, say, O'Hare or LaGuardia. And to lay further back on the analyst couch, I find that when I'm traveling, when I'm in the midst of all this new stuff, I'm often better able to dig down and think about things that, when I'm home, the day-to-day activities get in the way. Travel can keep my day-to-day stuff at arm's length, you know, maybe 2 arm's lengths if I'm not in an English-speaking place. I can tune out a lot of the peripheral chatter, the television hanging up in the corner, the adjacent conversations, because I don't understand them. But even when I can't understand what's being said around me, I've found travel still expanding my understanding, my perspectives. It's one thing to read about the size of China's population, or the poverty in India, or the humid heat in Vietnam, or the homeless encampments in San Francisco, but it's a whole next level to see it and experience it in person. What seems black and white from a distance starts to dither into gray when it's up close. It forces me to do a much better job of seeing the other side, to see how my actions could be perceived by others. And I hope it ends up making me a more empathetic person, which is why I never bought into the new normal predictions of Bill Gates and others that travel would never be the same. There's just too many people like me. But the lack of travel during the COVID shutdowns, the move to virtual work, and honestly, my own slouching toward retirement has made it more of a struggle to generate new and what I thought was interesting content that is more about the journey than the destination. 2 years ago, I wrote in a note, I'm definitely not making it to episode 200. I've surprised myself by making it here, but it seems like a good point to wrap it up. Landmark episode number and 19 years after the first episode in May 2005. So what's next? Honestly, I'm not really sure. Actually, no, I do know that there's a couple of things. I do know that I'm going to clean up the Travel Commons website, fix the SSL certificate that Robert Fennerty pinged me about last June, delete the out-of-date posts, and then reconfigure the website to focus more on written work, the blog posts, rather than the podcast, because I think that's kind of what comes next for me, written stuff that's more about the destination than the journey, to flip that tagline around. I've done it pretty infrequently in the past. The podcast always took priority. Kind of the last blog post about a destination was about our January 2021 trip to Tucson. But I found myself giving out a lot of travel recommendations recently to guys around my age who know I've done a bit of travel, asking me, what should I do in this place? Like last weekend, I ran into a guy in a Nashville microbrewery tap room who, when I sat next to him at the beginning of the year, asked me for recommendations for Rome. So again, last weekend when I caught up with him, he said, that beer bar down the alley in Trastevere in Rome that you recommended was great, he said. And that neighborhood too, we would have never gone there if you hadn't suggested it. I don't know, maybe travel writing editors and travel magazines have over-rotated from articles that tell me where to go to articles that tell me a story about a place. I don't know. So maybe there's something there for me. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't, but I don't know. It's good to have something to keep me occupied. Okay, that's it. That is the end of Travel Cummins Podcast number 200. I hope you've enjoyed this last show, and thanks really so much to all of you who've been along on this ride. As I said earlier, you can still ping me at comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, and Peacock on Twitter, the Travel Commons page on Facebook and Instagram. The travelcommons.com website will still be around. I'll put links to any new posts on all the socials. And if you aren't on social media, which I can completely understand, and you want to know when I post something, it used to be we had this thing called RSS, and actually it still works well for podcasts. That's when you subscribe to this podcast in a podcast application, that application is actually reaching out and ingesting the RSS feed. So not to spin the propeller too hard. And we used to have that for most websites, but that seems to have gone away. So now my website still will have some ability to subscribe to notes via RSS, but if that is way beyond your technical pay grade, which is, again, completely understandable, and you want to know when I post something, send your email address to me at comments@travelcommons.com. And, I'll keep a list and then I'll email out a link to new material whenever I post it. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I'll do what the cool kids do and do a Travel Commons newsletter. Again, email replacing RSS feeds. Go figure. I can't figure it out. Anyhow, just to wrap it all up, Thelma's comment in her note about the outro song, Pictures of You by the Scottish band Evangeline, I can't remember their pronunciation, got me digging in through the Travel Commons archives all the way back to episode 14, where the band leader explained the origins of the song. And so it only seems right to close out this last episode with his words, his explanations, and the full song. Here you go, Thelma, the full song. And as always, safe travels, and really, thanks. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
Hi, I'm Willie Evans from Scott's band Evangeline, sending good thoughts to Mark and all the listeners of the Travel Commons podcast. Touring's a part of our job that we love. It's exciting, it's fun, it's energising, and it's great to get out there and meet the fans and see new places. The downside, however, is that it can be a bit boring and predictable, with each day being pretty much the same as the day before, and inevitably we all miss our friends and our loved ones back home. The song Pictures of You from our Hardway album is about that longing for our wives and families. And, whether you're an entertainer or musician or perhaps a salesman or businessman who travels a lot, then I hope you can identify with it. Hope you enjoy the song. Have a great day.
Is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel, but one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying into the phone, within my heart you find my
smile helps me through all the lonely miles. From California to Carolina, you call me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying into the phone, within my heart you'll find my pictures of you at home. No matter where life takes me, how many miles I roam, I close my eyes and I see pictures of you at home. Tears start falling, crying into the phone.